It's time, Fort Wayne. Your sports, your station. It's the Sports Rush with Brett Rump.
Three ball, Max Landis.
Covering all the topics that hit a nerve here in the Summit City.
Clark, 11-yard touchdown.
Only on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. Now, here's your host, Brett Rump.
The greatest, most interesting, most important person of all time.
You are incredible.
Listen, I'm older and I'm wise.
Well, you're half right.
What
is this, amateur hour?
This is
going to
be huge.
I believe this is going to be our finest hour.
Just when I think you said the stupidest thing ever, you keep talking.
I think that's the worst thing I've ever heard.
That boy ain't right.
The simplest way to put it, I have problems.
Welcome to the alleged show.
This is the soundtrack of my childhood. This is it. If you had to piece all of my childhood together and bring out one piece of music, this is it. Wednesday afternoon sports rush in Fort Wayne. Derek Decker in for Brett Rump, pinch hitting again with producer Adam Lundy. Getting tired of me yet?
Nah, we're hanging out.
All right. I love it. And we're starting off on a great note. Whenever we begin with a SpongeBob note, we're already having a really good day. 46862 is the Parkview Sports Medicine text line. If you want to hear more SpongeBob soundtrack, let us know. 46862, and we've got a full show on tap for you today. This has been kind of an interesting day in news. And me being the college basketball junkie that I am, there's been a lot of stuff that's happened in the last 24 hours once again. With transfer portal, wild things. We're going to get to that in just a second. But we start with college basketball. Locally, the Mastodons playing in the CIT Championship tonight at 7 against Norfolk State on the road. Coming up after our first break here, we're going to talk with Brett Rump, and he's going to preview tonight's game. Also talk a little bit about how the Dons got it done against Tarleton State and the CIT run as they try for their first ever championship since joining Division I, and a chance to do that tonight. Pregame 6:45, tip-off at 7. Right here on 1380 The Fan. Also news for today, John Calipari has been announced that he will return for another season at Kentucky. There was a lot of stuff floating out about him not coming back. There were some rumors that had some legs to it, to be honest with you. And obviously the way things have gone down the last few years in the postseason for Kentucky, not good. A lot of folks feel like nobody does less with more than John Calipari. He is not quite turned into public enemy number one in Lexington yet, but it's getting kind of hairy. And the Blue Bloods are having some real issues. Just consider, okay, before we get to the other stuff, just want people to consider here what's going on with Blue Bloods in college, or like historical Blue Bloods in college basketball, okay? Kentucky was pretty good most of the year, in and out of the rankings. They hung on. In fact, at some points they were in the top 10, but mostly somewhere in the top 25. Had some weird losses this year. And they also had some games where you felt like, man, this is a Final Four roster. They've got talent enough that they can outshoot, outscore anybody. Ultimately, it was the defense that let them down in the first round of the NCAA tournament against Oakland. And the Golden Grizzlies got that big win, ran into NC State in the second round. Jack Kolke going off and turning into kind of America's player in the first round of the NCAA tournament. Kentucky allowing that to happen. There's only so much you can do. Sometimes you run into a player like that, and guys get hot, especially from mid-majors. They have the ability to do that, and they become fan favorites very, very quickly throughout the course of a game, and in their case, in the course of a weekend. But Cal had some issues over the past season, the last 2 years, and I think the timeline is certainly running short for him and his career at Kentucky. Doesn't mean he's going to be done coaching necessarily, but I think just like at any program, your time runs out eventually, except for you think about what Blue Bloods are made of, and that's usually long, extremely long coaching tenures. And he's been there for a long time. He's had some great success, but his success has really waned some. Part of that is because his model is breaking down. That young, one-and-done model doesn't work in college basketball the way it used to. Just getting as much NBA talent and freshmen that you can doesn't always work because you got these 5-6 year players floating around in college hoops in the portal. And so it's a little bit different than some of the great teams that he's had over the past number of years. Speaking of Blue Bloods, Louisville, maybe not necessarily a Blue Blood, but certainly in that conversation for one of the bigger national basketball brands, has officially hired their new coach. We were wondering what it was going to be. There was some Thoughts that actually I had thrown out Tom Crean as a possibility earlier today. Obviously, a guy that Indiana fans and folks listening to this show are certainly familiar with. Josh Schertz was, you know, not in the running because of all the sources out there talking about him being agreed upon, at least in principle, with St. Louis. But he is apparently going to officially decide, Josh Schertz, whether he's coming back to Indiana State or going to St. Louis. There's a lot going on there, but the hire has been made, and it is Pat Kelsey of Charleston. That was a name out there that, if you remember a couple weeks ago, Indiana had potentially targeted. At least some folks that cover Indiana were pitching him as a possible candidate if the Indiana job opened up. Of course, it didn't. Mike Woodson announced, the school announced that Mike Woodson would come back for another season close to the end of the year, and they decided not to have a head coaching change. And Pat Kelsey was a guy that a lot of folks thought maybe could fit the bill. High scoring offense, leading a program at a mid-major. He's a little bit more experienced than some of these other guys, Dusty May types, Josh Schertz types. Both of those guys are a little bit younger in terms of what Pat Kelsey brings to the table in experience. So he is the new coach at Louisville. But they went through a number of guys. We were talking about Richard Pitino as a possibility this morning, and some sources out there saying that he turned the job down. Scott Drew was not interested in the job. Dusty May didn't seem too interested in the job. So it's certainly not the job that maybe folks thought it would be. I think Indiana's kind of in a similar spot to Louisville, where you've got a lot of basketball history. Maybe not quite the attractive job that it once was. And Dusty May got himself a pretty nice paycheck up at Michigan. And one would expect the same for Pat Kelsey at Louisville. But there's a lot to rebuild. You are building from zero at Louisville. And while Michigan was bad this year, certainly, and you will have to pretty much rebuild a roster out of the portal, there's at least some stuff that they can work with. I mean, Louisville has hit complete rock bottom. With that being said, we've got a whole lot else to talk about. Speaking of which, bracket. If your bracket is busted, mine is, and that's really no surprise. We talked about that a little bit yesterday. And by the way, you're going to have to put up with me not only today, but tomorrow as well, so get used to it. But if your bracket's busted, 1380 The Fan's second chance bracket is here with your shot at $100 thanks to Winner's Circle in New Haven. Pick the final 16 teams of the tournament. If you already signed up for Bracket Bash, just click on the 16-team tab and make your picks. If you're not signed up, text the word BASH to 46862, and that's our Parkview Sports Medicine text line, or you can sign up at 1380thefan.com. You know what else it's time for? Today's top headlines. Here's Adam Lundy.
All right, thanks, Derek. Appreciate that. Let's get in today's top headlines.
Too quick of a toss?
No, you're good. You're good, my man. We're always ready to rock here. Well, MLB opening day is tomorrow, but openers in New York and Philadelphia were postponed today until Friday because of rainy forecasts in both cities. The New York Mets were scheduled to host the Milwaukee Brewers tomorrow afternoon, a day featuring the first full slate of Major League games this year. But with wet weather expected in Queens, the game was pushed back to Friday at 1:40 p.m. The Phillies also announced their sold-out opener against the NL East rival Atlanta Braves was moved from tomorrow at 3:05 to Friday at the same time due to anticipated rain. So, a couple fan bases will have to wait one more day to get their baseball fix for the first time this season. Some NFL news. Free agent pass rusher Jadeveon Clowney has agreed to a contract with the Carolina Panthers, the team announced today. Terms were not disclosed, but sources told media that Clowney agreed to a two-year, $20 million contract that can be worth up to $24 million. It will be a homecoming for Clowney, who is from Rock Hill, South Carolina, and played collegiately for South Carolina. And kind of an interesting story, Iowa women's basketball star Caitlin Clark has been offered $5 million to play in Ice Cube's Big Three League. League co-founder Ice Cube confirmed on social media. Quote, "We intended the offer to remain private while Caitlin Clark plays for the championship," Ice Cube wrote on X, quote, "but I won't deny what's now already out there. Big Three made a historic offer to Caitlin Clark. Why wouldn't we? She is a generational athlete who can achieve tremendous success in the Big Three." I still think she might go to the Indiana Fever, but we'll see, my friend.
I would say so, especially with the deal that's been announced with Gainbridge and all the stuff that's come out after that. I think it's also worth pointing out at this point in time, all of the deal that was rumored with Fox and them potentially pitching some numbers. I mean, you look back at the ratings this year, and women's games on Fox actually outdrew men's games in terms of viewership this season, and that is just a crazy mark. We were talking some yesterday about the growth of women's college basketball, and she gets a lot of credit for that. Whether people like her or not, she gets a lot of credit because you're watching her for one of two reasons. And one of the things that I said early on in the season, actually, I think it was when she had the run-in with Ohio State and the player and the fan went to the floor and all that after the court storming, she has the Deion effect with Colorado, right? For me, not a guy. First of all, I like Deion in some ways. Other ways, not so much. I wouldn't say I'm neutral, but I'm not going to say which way I'm slanted. But I wanted to watch Deion. Like, all of the storylines surrounding Colorado made me watch some of the games. I didn't watch every game, but I watched three or four games, especially at the beginning of the season. First of all, they're playing good teams. Second of all, you want to see if this is going to crash and burn, because that was one of my ideas, is like, boy, this could completely tank, but how could they get worse than last year? Well, people watch Caitlin Clark not because they're rebuilding a program, but because of what she's done individually is going to end up being unmatched by any player in college basketball history. And so you're watching history as it unfolds, as she has grown in popularity. Her personality has certainly changed, and I don't think I'd ever say she was necessarily a humble player or even a super likable player. But now I think she's taken the role of the villain and played that up to a point where people want to watch. And so that's something that we're going to get to see this weekend too, with Iowa in the Sweet 16.
Yep, and she's already bringing views to the women's tournament. The Hawkeyes win over Holy Cross on Saturday, averaged 3.23 million viewers on ABC. This is according to Nielsen. And that viewership surpassed the 2.5 million who watched last year's Elite Eight between Iowa and Louisville. So that was the most viewed women's tournament game ever, excluding Final Four and title games.
Yeah, I will say, too, ESPN dodged a massive bullet. I mean, Iowa was close in the fourth quarter on Monday night against West Virginia. If they had lost in that game before going to the Sweet 16. Now, a lot of folks maybe don't know this. The last couple years have been the explosion and all that. Of course, I was in the national championship last season. But 2 years ago, in 2022, Iowa lost in their own regional. They were upset by Creighton, who turned out to be the Cinderella of that tournament, ran all the way to the Elite Eight and won a couple more games after beating Iowa. And that was a massive disappointment. Of course, Caitlin Clark was on that team. That was a team that succeeded so much in the Big Ten that year. But it was just before the turning point of last year when folks really started to catch on. I actually had the pleasure of doing a couple of her games on student radio and on TV once. And they were playing Indiana in both cases, and Iowa won both games. Both of them actually in the state of Indiana. One of them was at Assembly Hall. The other one was in the Big Ten tournament, which was in Indianapolis, which is where the Big Ten tournament should always be for the women. If you want to move the men's tournament around, I kind of get it. But for women's basketball, when you're starving for attention, I mean, that's becoming less and less common now. They have a legitimate gripe to say. We were talking with Dylan yesterday about moving sites for the NCAA tournament from home court advantage for the top 16 teams in the country to potentially neutral sites, just like the men's games. Although I don't know how you pass up the atmospheres that you get with home games on the women's side yet. Maybe that's 10 or 15 years down the road. You know, you don't want to just jump ship and shovel everybody off the neutral sites. I don't know if we're at that point where they'd completely draw, other than obviously teams like Iowa, even South Carolina this year that's undefeated. Here's a reality check, though, for South Carolina. Like, for as much growth as we've seen in college basketball on the women's side, what is going to happen when Caitlin Clark goes to the WNBA next year? What are the ratings going to look like next season? How many of those storylines carry another year? And how many of the casual fans that have started to tune in the last year or two to watch Caitlin Clark or something else, you know, just because you watch a Caitlin Clark game or an Iowa game, you're probably a lot more likely to just randomly flip on a Thursday night game on TV during the regular season if it's on, just like you'd have a men's game on in the background. That's usually what's happening at my house, whether I'm doing something, whether I'm watching the game intently or not. There's always something on in the background. And sometimes for me, that's a women's game. That doesn't get owed to Caitlin Clark, but there's certainly some argument that it is the case. And what will those fans do next year when she's not playing in college hoops anymore? It could be a big deal. That's why Fox allegedly offered her or was putting together a contract deal, an NIL deal package to keep her in college for one more year. She was so profitable for the network this season. And while she wasn't the lone reason, she was the biggest reason that the network had the success it did. I mean, Iowa played on mainline Fox almost every weekend, it felt like, when they were playing in primetime. Gus Johnson did some games for Iowa women's basketball, and it's become quite a culture. But even the best team in the country, which isn't Iowa, by the way. Iowa's not even close to the best team in the country. South Carolina's undefeated. It would be interesting to see them match up, but I think South Carolina's got a significant advantage if those two end up playing each other. South Carolina's undefeated this year. Indiana actually outdrew South Carolina in attendance in their first and second round games at Assembly Hall, and Indiana barely scraped it together to get a four seed. Now, again, maybe that's an anomaly. Of course, Iowa sold out as well all season long. They sold out every season ticket for the entire season. Maybe Indiana's a bit of an anomaly because the basketball history on the men's side, attendance is historically good at IU. Same thing for Purdue. If Purdue was in the NCAA tournament on the women's side and hosting games, Mackey would be packed out, no problem. In fact, they were one of the top 25 teams in attendance this year. Purdue finished well below 500 and missed the NCAA tournament. They still had great fan support. So maybe an anomaly, but I also think that is something you can kind of showcase the growth of women's college basketball. But if that hangs on next season, I think that's still got to be owed, at least in some part, to Caitlin Clark. One other thing we're going to talk about later in the hour, this is kind of a teaser here. Iowa, something's going on at Iowa, and we're going to kind of talk about what that is. Head coach Fran McCaffrey, not necessarily known to be on the burning hot seat. They didn't have a great year. They made the NIT, missed the NCAA tournament, but a number of their starting players have gone into the portal, including now his son, Patrick McCaffrey. Is he getting the boot, or is he going to retire? The rumors are flying big time for Fran McCaffrey and the Iowa Hawkeyes on the men's team, which has gotten considerably less coverage than the women's team this year out in Iowa City. We're going to talk about that later on in our first hour. But when we come back after our first time out here on the Sports Rush, we're going to be joined by the normal host of this show, Brett Rump, who will join us to talk about the Dons, tonight's championship game of the CIT on the road at Norfolk State. At Norfolk State is a 7 o'clock tip-off, 6:45 pregame right here on The Fan. Brett Rump joins the show next. You're listening to The Sports Rush, and I'm Derek Decker, in for Brett with Adam on The Sports Rush, 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM.
You're listening to The Sports Rush with Brett Rump on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM.
See, it's one of those times where that liner's actually right today, where you are listening to The Sports Rush, and we are joined by Brett Rump on our guest line. Brett, welcome to the show once again, your own show. Hey, the weirdness has got to be out of the way because we already did this once. Now we're doing it a second time. The Dons in the CIT Championship tonight at Norfolk State. And, let's talk about what this matchup should bring. It should be pretty competitive and two teams getting through the bracket. The Dons had to win a couple, and Norfolk with just one win to get to the title game.
Well, first of all, I don't want anybody to get too comfortable being on that end of this conversation. it's fun. The Dons here in Norfolk tonight got a chance to claim a championship. And, Derek, it's been quite the week for the Mastodons. They've had to go on the road to win this tournament. Started last week at Bowling Green. That was a short trip. That was an easy one. They got that one out of the way with a win over Bowling Green on an Eric Mulder bucket with about 15 seconds to go. And then that earned them a trip to Tarleton State in Stephenville, Texas, which is outside of Dallas. The basketball team and the coaching staff, they had to bus from the campus to O'Hare to be able to get a flight that had enough seats available on it to get them down to Dallas, where they then had to bus 2 hours to get to Stephenville. All told, with the bus trip to O'Hare, the flight, the time it took them, you know, obviously waiting at the airport to get the flight, all told, they had about 10 hours of travel on Sunday, and then Monday night had to play a really good Tarleton State team that was 25-9 on the season. And getting a victory Monday night at 9 o'clock, they then were very aware that somehow they had to organize travel, 23 people from Dallas, Texas to Norfolk, Virginia, and play a championship game tonight. and about a 15-hour travel day yesterday has them here in Virginia ready to go and try to claim this championship.
Yeah, and more on the travel. It certainly has not been necessarily the smoothest of rides, as you were just kind of talking about there with the Dons. You think that has any impact on tonight? You know, it's not hard to get juiced up for a championship game, especially when the program has starved for a tournament championship of any kind since they've joined the Division I ranks. But do you think that has any impact on how this game plays out tonight?
Well, you know, the common sense side of it says it's got to have a little bit of an impact. I mean, yesterday, because the guys thought they were going to be on a flight to Chicago, and then they were working with the airlines to try to find a flight from Chicago to Norfolk, that was what the plan was. And they had originally made the plan to fly out of Dallas to Chicago, believing that that would be the best place to catch a connection to Norfolk should they win the game against Tarleton State. And worst case scenario, if they lost by going to Chicago, they would be able to jump on a bus and get to Fort Wayne in a reasonable amount of time. Well, en route to the Dallas airport yesterday morning, they could not get the connection to Norfolk, Virginia. So they realized that they were going to have to alter their flight plan. And so during about a two-hour trip from Stephenville to the Dallas airport, assistant coach Ryan Sims was working feverishly trying to find alternate routes to be able to find this for 23 players. And eventually they were able to go from Dallas to Houston, catch a flight about 4.5 hours later from Houston to Norfolk. They departed the hotel yesterday morning at 6 a.m., and got into Norfolk last night about 10 p.m. local time. Mm. So it was, and you know, Coach Coffin talks about how this team has been so road tough, and it has been a good road team. They're 10-7 on the road this year, and that's any time you can finish at 500 or better on the road, you've had a great season, and you do show some road toughness playing in hostile environments. They've won two in a row now, on the road in this tournament. And so they'll try to make it three. But I think if fatigue is going to show at all tonight, it's not going to be in the Dons' effort. It's going to be perhaps in the three-point shots, maybe at the free throw line. If you start to see shots come up short, that's a lot of times where you see the travel stress kind of showing itself, is all of a sudden the legs aren't quite there. You know, you're working at 99% instead of 100%, and that leaves the ball normally would swish through the hoop off the front rim. So we'll see what happens tonight, but it's certainly not going to be a lack of effort. These guys are ready to go. They had an enthusiastic game day practice earlier this afternoon over at the gym, and it should be a lot of fun tonight.
Mastodons on the road out in Virginia against Norfolk State. Talking with the voice of the Dons, Brett Rump. Brett, Norfolk State went 14-0 at home this season. They had a strong year in the MEAC, went 11-3, but got beat by Howard in the tournament. How do the Dons match up with Norfolk, who, again, only played one game, beat Alabama A&M on Saturday night by 15 points, also playing at home, and they played both of their they played in Norfolk, not necessarily at their home gym, but they played in Norfolk in the tournament. So they've gone back five games in a row. They've played in their own city.
Yeah, it's been a while since these guys haven't slept in their own bed. But the College Insider.com tournament, it's, you know, unfortunately, when it comes time to put together your field, you're kind of last in the pecking order. And that's not to diminish the importance of this, because for mid-majors that don't have the opportunities to get into an NCAA field or even an NIT field, there's only a couple of options, the CBI and the CIT. And the CBI is played down in Daytona. And the CIT changed formats this year, which really appealed to Coach Kaufman, who's always had a great relationship with collegeinsider.com. And the format was supposed to be home teams would host four opponents, and you'd have two games, back-to-back days, and then you advance to the semifinals if you were able to win that pod. Unfortunately, some of the teams that were scheduled to be in this tournament became unavailable at the last second. because of transfer portal issues, which, of course, everybody's aware of what's going on in the transfer portal. But for a number of factors, the field got dwindled from 16 to 9. Norfolk actually had a double bye. They didn't even play in the first two rounds of this tournament. And then they get an Alabama A&M team that only won 12 games all year, and that included an upset victory in the first round of the CIT. They were 12-22, I believe, when they came into Norfolk. So, you know, Norfolk State hasn't truly been tested in this tournament, but it's a really good team, a team that's won 22 games this year. As you mentioned, they have been unbeatable at home, literally 14-0. But the two teams do a lot statistically that almost mirrors one another. When you look at Norfolk State and the Mastodons, in fact, Norfolk State, Charleston State, and the Mastodons all have very similar analytics when you look at some of the defensive statistics. For instance, forcing turnovers out of your opponent, steals per game. This is Norfolk State team that can generate some turnovers. They score very well in transition, so taking care of the basketball is going to be a real key for the Dons tonight. But also the Mastodons have been among the nation's top 10 teams in forcing turnovers and steals, where the Dons, I think, had four of the top five in Horizon League in steals per game, including the Horizon League leader, Rasheed Bello. But, you know, it's going to be one of those games where the two teams do a lot of the same things to be successful, and it's just going to come down to a matter of who protects the ball and who does what they do best, better, against one another.
How about the late-game execution here for the Dons in the CIT? A pair of wins by three combined points. You know, they had all those close losses during the regular season. What's changed here in the postseason for this team to kind of get over the hump in those close games?
Well, part of that depends on what part of late game you're talking about. You know, unfortunately, against Charleston State, the Dons had a 9-point lead with about 5 minutes left, and it ended up being a back-and-forth game over the final 2 minutes. Charleston State went on a run, and all of a sudden it was back and forth. Both teams were going punch, counter-punch. But, you know, I think one of the things for the Mastodons is they can get buckets from all five guys. And the fact that Eric Mulder, who's the only one of the five starters for the Mastodons who doesn't average double figures, he has been the game-winning scorer in the two tournament games, kind of backs up the fact that, you know, you can't come out on a final possession and lock in on one guy. A lot of teams, you get to a final possession down by one, you kind of know who's going to have the ball in their hand. The Mastodons are able to run basically their regular offense because they just read and react, and the open guy is going to find himself with the ball, and every one of his teammates has confidence in him to be able to shoot it and win the game. And that's played out in both of these tournament games where the Dons drove, the defense collapsed, and both times they found Eric Mulder hanging at the basket, and he put in a couple of layups, both of them ironically with about 15 seconds left on the clock, which meant in both games on the road, they had to come up with a defensive stop against Bowling Green and Charleston State, and both of those teams have an individual that's a prolific scorer. So you kind of knew that final possession, who was going to get the ball for each of those respective teams. The Dons could game plan for that. They took it away, got some great defensive stops, and here they are. So, it's kind of interesting the balance the team has and how it does play out in late-game situations.
Brett, of course, this is a roster that could return basically everything, almost everything, for next year. Many of the returning pieces, you never know about transfer portal once the season ends. But the chances are the core of this team is going to stick around for next year. Coach Kaufman kind of remarked about that, talking about a win tonight could potentially give that momentum going into next season. You know, there's only four teams that are going to finish the season with wins, and the Dons have a chance to become one of those tonight. How much energy does that potentially give a team going into the offseason?
Well, it's a tremendous building block into next year. In fact, I think you know, once you miss out on the ultimate prize that you play the entire season for, which is to get that one bid out of your 11-team league that puts you in the NCAA tournament. And by the way, let's not forget that one bid from the Horizon League went to Oakland, and they certainly represented the conference pretty well in the NCAA tournament with that win over Kentucky. But once you get past that, it's obviously a disappointment. But at that point, I think a lot of these postseason tournaments, they are a way to kind of end the season with a positive note. But the other part of it is that you want to go through a tournament experience with your guys. You get that opportunity because, again, tournament basketball is different than any other game because if you win, you play again. If you lose, you're done. And so there's that added pressure to those final possessions that we talked about. And with so many of these guys coming back and having a fairly young lineup, which, of course, Coach Kaufman has told the team that the transfer portal officially closes at 9 o'clock tonight. But the point is, you know, it gives you something to build on for next year. And it's certainly something, I think, that has motivated the guys. But I think just this team has got a special chemistry with one another. They really enjoy playing together. And I just think that each step along the way, the opportunity to continue this season with guys that they really enjoy playing with has been a lot of motivation in and of itself. And the fact, you know, that they've been on the road traveling 10 hours on Sunday and another 15 hours on Monday to play two basketball games just shows how much they, number one, love the game, and number two, enjoy spending time with one another, because they've certainly gotten that opportunity over the last 4 days.
Brett Rump, voice of the Dons, joining us here on the Sports Rush. 6:45 pregame tip-off at 7 o'clock tonight as the Macedons play for a CIT championship at Norfolk State. Brett, thanks a lot for joining the show. Hope to talk to you again soon. Unfortunately, I'll be occupying your chair. You know, if you could just get back on a flight a little earlier, we could fly you a charter to host tomorrow's show. But
you know what it's like this week. It's spring break week, and here we are making flight reservations within like 24 hours.
Yeah.
And we're running a plane with 23 seats. Yeah, that works real well. So I got a compliment. I got a compliment Ryan Sims, who handles the travel, because he basically had a sleepless night after the victory over Tarleton State, because he had to try to figure out how to get this group from Stephenville, Texas, to Norfolk, Virginia, in time to get prepared for the game. And it's not been an easy task this week, but it's one we look forward to the ending of, and hopefully it's a positive ending tonight.
Well, Brett, thanks so much for hopping on. Looking forward to your call tonight.
Thanks. Appreciate it, guys.
All right. That's Brett Rump, the voice of the Dons. We'll be back later this week, but you got to put up with me. In the meantime, the Macedons playing for a CIT championship tonight at Norfolk State. We did get a text in on our text line, 46862. It is on a stream. The game is available for video on a free stream on the website of Norfolk State. So it's not going to be necessarily the production that you expect late in the tournament. So that's why you got to keep it tuned right here on 1380 The Fan. Brett Rump will have live coverage again starting at 6:45 here tonight. That's just less than an hour after the end of our show and after we get off the air. But really looking forward to seeing how the Dons perform tonight, and always fun to play for a chance at a title. We'll take another timeout when we come back on this hour of the Sports Rush. We've got Purdue from Purdue-Fort Wayne to Purdue talk and how the Boilermakers match up with the Zags coming up this weekend. Also, want to talk about next year with ED gone. How is this roster going to reshape? Good news for Purdue fans. I think it's going to be pretty good. And I think Purdue is still going to be a force to be reckoned with no matter what happens at the end of this season. That and much more in this first hour of the Wednesday edition of the Sports Rush on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. Welcome back to the Sports Rush. I'm Derek Decker in for Brett Rump, hanging out with Adam Lundy in our 1380 The Fan studio here today. We just heard from Brett before our break about the Macedons tonight playing the CIT title game against Norfolk State. Again, tip off at 7 o'clock here on 1380 The Fan. From that to what's going on in the NCAA tournament with the Boilermakers. They got Gonzaga on Friday, and we're going to preview this game, but also I really want to keep this focused on what the next year looks like. And I know Purdue fans are maybe going to be upset about that. hey, let's not talk about next year until this year's over. Totally understand that vantage point. 46862 is our Parkview Sports Medicine text line if you want to chip in. But what I think is going to happen for Purdue is good things in the offseason. I don't know what's going to be necessary in the portal. I think Purdue's certainly going to look different. They're going to play a different style. In my opinion, listen, I don't have any problem watching Zach Edey. He is maybe the most dominant big man or dominant college basketball player, period, we've seen in a couple of decades in the sport. The way that he's played has forced officials to be frustrated with how the game's called. Its fans are frustrated with how games are called. Purdue fans say he doesn't get fouled enough. Other fans say they get the whistle all the time. I can see actually both sides of that argument, because there are definitely some plays where Edey's arm, just his entire arm, just gets totally held, and sometimes it does kind of feel like opponents, their game plan, and Adam, kind of correct me if I'm wrong here, but it seems like opponents sometimes strategy is, well, they can't call all the fouls. And that does seem to be the way that teams have tried to defend Edey this year.
Yeah, we've seen some games he does have a lot of scratches on his arms, a lot of red marks, and it's just like, hey, those came from somewhere, and he's, you know, there's no players fouled out on the other team yet. So
right.
Definitely some physicality.
Yeah, and I think so far in the NCAA tournament, now granted they have played in two games that haven't been close in the second half, so it's really hard to get a good grip on the officiating yet. I think it's been okay. I don't think it's really impacted either game significantly for the Boilermakers just yet. But Edey's going to be out next year, and who's going to be in? You know, you wonder about Berg moving inside and getting regular minutes. I think Trey Kaufman-Wren has showcased some serious upside here in the NCAA tournament, also in the Big Ten tournament, going back to the back stages of the season. You know, you got Braden Smith and Fletcher Lawyer that are pretty much locks to come back next year and play significant roles. And then you got guys like Heidi and Colvin for depth. I think Colvin's another key for them next season to how they transition to becoming a more guard-oriented team next year. And for folks that may say, oh, well, how is Purdue going to succeed without the dominant big man inside? It's not like they've never done this before. Okay, Purdue has had seasons where they've been guard-oriented. They've had the Jaden Ivies, the Carson Edwards of the world. And yes, they had good big men in those years, but those were not the focal point of the offense. And I think that's what's key. Right now, Zach Edey's clearly the focal point of the offense, and that's okay. And that's not to say that everybody else on the floor isn't a scoring threat, because in their starting five, all five can score in double figures on any given night. No question about it. Even at the start of the round of 32 game against Utah State, we saw Trey Kaufman-Wren get out to a hot start. He had the first couple of baskets. He was the one being the aggressor as they brought Edey away on defense. And so I think Purdue fans need to not sweat it out. Now, I'll kind of leave it at that in terms of Purdue talk for next year. How do they match up with the Zags? In my opinion, super interesting matchup. Couple things at play here. In terms of environment and atmosphere, number one, at Little Caesars Arena in Detroit, it's going to be a huge Purdue fan advantage. There's no question about that. We knew it was going to be this way. It was setting up that way in the Midwest region to get Indianapolis in the first two rounds and then Detroit, which isn't all that unfamiliar to Purdue fans. You go back to 2019, what happened in the Sweet 16 and Elite Eight. They ended up playing Virginia and Tennessee down at Louisville. And so, you know, close proximity, tons of Purdue fans, huge environment, didn't push them to the win, although you lose in a crazy game. What are you going to do about that? But the Zags have had a little bit of an unusual season for Mark Few. And I think it's important here for Purdue fans. This is no question about the team's preparation and how Matt Painter is ready to go for these guys. They're obviously familiar with each other playing in the Maui Invitational. But I think what is important here is to remember that the Zags are really, really good. This is an elite team. And a lot of folks thought they were going to get bounced in the first round or the first two rounds of the NCAA tournament. Granted, their draw was pretty favorable. There's no question about that. Okay, they ended up getting a five seed. They took down a Kansas squad that was completely unfocused. They were injured. They've been battered all season. And yeah, it was kind of a competitive game for a while, but the Zags really took control at about halftime and then sort of dominated from there. And Mark Few and Gonzaga have put together a season that's been really impressive. Also, just want to point out on the Kansas thing, if you didn't know, Bill Self made a comment earlier this week about, hey, if I'm being honest, I've been thinking about next year for like the last month. This is crazy to me to get away with a quote like that. Think about if either Matt Painter or Mike Woodson said that.
Right, right.
Like, I get it. Bill Self's untouchable. You've got a season. And, of course, he went through the health issues in last year's NCAA tournament and all the things that were going on with KU. But they really fell off a cliff at the end of this season. I had preseason picked them to be national champions. I thought this could be like team of the decade kind of stuff with the roster that they had. And I do think they certainly would have been better, maybe a two seed somewhere in that line, if they had been able to stay healthy down the stretch of the season. But they got blown out in a few games. You could just kind of tell Bill Self wasn't all that invested. You know, they almost messed it up and lost to Samford in the first round. But you think about the game he got tossed out of against Texas Tech. Like, they've been kind of a train wreck. So the matchups have been favorable for Gonzaga to get to the Sweet 16. That being said, this is a group that, you know, even though they didn't win the West Coast Conference, the champion ended up losing in the first round, so that didn't do much for the champ. They have been very, very good over the last few weeks of the regular season. Graham Ike, transfer from Wyoming, who sat out last season because he had some medical problems. That's a name that you may be familiar with if you're an Indiana fan. Graham Ike, of course, playing over at Wyoming for the first 3 years of his career, ended up taking on the Hoosiers in the first four in 2022 in Dayton. But then you've got Ryan Nemhard coming in. And again, this is a team they've already played. It always concerns me being a team that you've already beaten during the regular season. Unfortunately for Purdue, it's playing out almost exactly like the Maui Invitational played out, with the way that they're going to play these teams in order in the tournament. And this is a matchup that I think maybe favors Purdue extremely slightly on paper. I don't know, man. I don't know if this is a game that Purdue is going to be able to cruise in. We have seen them dominate some really good teams. Utah State was a good team. I don't care what anybody says. Mountain West really sucked in the NCAA tournament. They've really underperformed. I think they got too much credit last year because of what San Diego State was able to do, running all the way to the national championship game. But overall, the Mountain West has completely underperformed. They screwed a lot of people out of some money in the bracket in the first round and in the second round. Not impressive. The Zags are very good, and any conversation that you talk about with the Zags is going to involve the combination of EK and Nemhard. I think this could end up being a very high-scoring game. You know, Purdue's defense against some elite teams hasn't always been perfect. That's okay, because they can outscore basically anybody. I would put Purdue's offense up against anybody's in the country. I've said for months, I think Purdue has been the top offense in the nation. They're so efficient with the way they shoot it from three, totally different from where they were at this point in the season last year. They've got more weapons on the perimeter. They shoot it better. Edie's a better passer than he was at last year's tournament at this juncture. But it's also important to remember that the Zags have been to the Sweet 16 nine times in a row. That's not messing around. And the Zags have been the perfect encapsulation of a team that everybody loves to hate coming in to the tournament. Everybody wants to say, schedule strength. Their record's shiny. Schedule strength. Blah, 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 blah. Well, that has not been anything. Now, granted, you could say it's maybe affected their chances to win a national championship. I suppose you could say that. But you could say that for lots of teams. They are 27-7, a very offensively-minded team. They had some weird losses early on in the year, but all to pretty good teams. And the way that the game played out with Purdue back in November, a 10-point affair, the Zags had control of this game for a chunk of the first half. Now, Edie, in that game, ended up going for 25 points, went 9 of 10 from the line, 14 rebounds. That's a pretty average stat line for Zach Edey this year. And they shot it well from the foul line. And Purdue did not shoot it well from three. Neither did the Zags. Gonzaga was 6 for 32 from the three-point line in that game. If you think that's going to happen again, it's extremely unlikely for that to happen. Now, 6 may be the number they make, but they're going to be more efficient than that, one would think. You never know. But the Zags had control of this game in the first half, and then Purdue really came out of halftime and stuck it to Gonzaga, took the reins of the game very early on in the second half, and then just kind of held them off at the finish. But I think for folks to consider this kind of like this Purdue team as a super team, which, again, they are an elite team. Are they a super team? Maybe not. I think they're on the fringe of national championship conversations. I don't know if it's still, for Purdue fans, national championship or bust here, if it's Final Four or bust. To me, it has to be at least Final Four or bust, given where Purdue is at this point in the season. Like last year, there was a lot of conversation after they lost the game. And I know maybe you could say this is like revisionist history or hindsight 2020, that kind of thing. But a lot of folks were saying, okay, Purdue was due for a loss like this. It sucks that it was against Fairleigh Dickinson, but Purdue had been setting themselves up for a bad loss at some point with their inability to make threes late in the season. It has completely transformed this team now and turned them into, again, in my opinion, the best offense in the country. Illinois would like a word. UConn wants a word. The Zags maybe even want a word to be one of the best offenses in the country. I think this game's decided in the 90s, maybe the high 80s. I think this is going to be a very high-scoring game. The tempo should be pretty fun. Purdue has shown a willingness to be a little more up-tempo than they have been in recent years, including last year. It's still middle of the pack in the country, but they are at least willing to move it a little bit. Zags are in the top 100 in tempo. KenPom likes this game to end up being a win for Purdue, 81-77. I think it's going to be higher scoring than that. But this is a game that Purdue, and every fan is concerned about this game. I don't think there's any Purdue fan sitting out there. If you are one, 46862 is the Parkview Sports Medicine text line. But if you are a fan sitting out there feeling comfortable after the way Purdue looked in the first weekend, then that's great for you. I don't think there's any other Purdue fans feeling that way. With the recent history, the long-term history for Purdue in the tournament, you got to be concerned. And this is already a matchup that is really tight. And again, slanted slightly toward Purdue on paper. If Purdue has a second half like they did against Utah State, they're not losing. They have a second half like they had against Utah State. I don't know that they're losing to anybody. Maybe not even UConn. Like I have been of the opinion basically all season that UConn is the best team in the country. And I think they are head and shoulders above the rest of the competition, including Purdue. I think UConn in a matchup with Purdue could win by 10 points, 10, 12 points. Now, granted, they wouldn't be favored by that many. I think UConn has the weapons everywhere, and they have that rare combination where they mirror Purdue a little bit better than some other teams with the big inside, with what UConn has been able to do and facilitating Donovan Klingon inside. As long as he stays healthy, which has been the case for most of his career, you know, he's got a 7'2", 280-pound bruiser. Not many other teams can say that, you know, they've been able to challenge Edie more or less straight up with his height. We saw Khalil Ware do it a little bit with Indiana. It bothered Edie some, but then Ware got into foul trouble. Like, we just haven't seen Edie against, like, huge quality bigs. Now, there's a lot of good bigs inside the Big Ten. They played a couple of them outside of the Big Ten slate. But this year, I mean, you think back years, Kofi Coburn and those kind of types of guys, the Big Ten talent-wise was down in terms of really excellent quality bigs inside. I don't think that's necessarily the recipe for disaster for Purdue, but in this game, it's won by the guards. And I think NCAA tournament folks understand that. People that are Purdue fans understand that the game in the tournament is won by guards. If you watch games in the tournament, and I've said this just watching the Big Ten all season and in like other conferences sparingly, but the Big Ten most of the year, it's like watching a totally different sport. Pace of the game is different. Three-point shooting, completely different. And every team has ability to shoot threes. Every team that is still remaining in the tournament shoots threes at a high clip. That's where this game is decided for Purdue. I think it's decided in the high 80s or the low 90s, and should be a pretty fun matchup. 7:39 on Friday night, we will have the pregame and the tip-off from the Purdue Global Sports Network right here on 1380 The Fan. Well, if your bracket's busted, play in the 1380 The Fan second chance bracket for a shot at $100 to Winner's Circle in New Haven. Just go to the 16-team bracket in Bracket Bash or sign up by texting BASH to 46862 or at 1380thefan.com. Coming up in hour number two, Shane Alberani joins the show from the comments to talk about their playoff chances, Fran McCaffrey in Iowa, more portal talk in the NCAA and what's going on inside the transfer portal. We talked some yesterday. We're going to talk at length about the national brands, including coaching changes everywhere, what Dusty May talked about, and also we're also going to sprinkle in a little MLB opening day talk. We'll have much more on that tomorrow and a full season preview of Major League Baseball as the first full slate kicks off tomorrow. We'll talk about that and much more in the second hour of the Sports Rush. I'm Derek Decker in for Brett Rump on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM.